Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted over at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, June 28th, 2009, and this is show number 211. While this is a fun-packed show with tons of dumb questions and even some bunch of answers, how did that happen? Well, you'll find out. And a very, very cool interview that I know you're going to enjoy, plus a big improvement in chit-chat across the pond. Let's dig into the show.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
What do I?
What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, I don't know if I've ever seen a narrower topic with more rabid interest than the dumb question from last week, where Greg asked, because he was a Windows switcher, is there a quick way to just quit all the applications that he accidentally leaves open? I got tons of responses on that one. Jason Hyde said that he quits all of his applications at once using Launch Bar, and that this has been built in since at least version 4. He has Launch Bar to set to hit Command Space, so he hits that, then simply types QAA. This brings up the Quit All Applications action. You can have this run on a quick return keystroke or hang on the last key and it runs. He quits everything in the dock that is running except for Launch Bar. Menu apps and system apps keep running. He said you can enable it in the index if it doesn't run, but it's installed by default anyway. He attached a few screenshots so we could see what he means. Launch Bar is one of his must-have applications. I think that's a pretty cool solution. I gotta tell you, I haven't tried Launch Bar since about 1957. I really do need to give it another try sometime, because people who love it, love it. But let me have you listen up for even more solutions to this problem. Nick also wrote in with a suggestion. He said, here's a quick tip I thought I would share, as last week you were talking about closing applications. I heard you mention printers, because they stay on in the dock when you print something. Turns out, if you right-click on the printer icon in the dock, you'll see an auto-quit option. Once you set that, from now on, every time you print, it will automatically get culled from the dock. Wow, that's excellent, Nick. I like it. Why let the printer keep sucking up all our RAM? That's ridiculous. But wait, there's more. Here's a really cool entry in the How Can I Quit All My Applications category. Bet you thought we were done with this, didn't you? Well, Stephen Law suggested using Automator, but I didn't know how to do that. But then an amazing thing happened. David Hill sent in the exact instructions on how to do it using Automator. He made an audio recording for us and a Screen Steps tutorial. But then an even more amazing thing happened. Sean Peterson sent in a nearly identical solution. He also used Automator, he also made an audio recording, and he made a Screen Steps tutorial for us. What are the chances of both people doing this? All right, I really struggled with what to do because they came in within a couple of hours of each other. Whose do I play? Whose tutorial did I use? Well, here's a compromise I decided to come up with. I'm going to play David's audio, and then I'm going to tell you about a slight improvement on it that Sean came up with, and I'll put his Screen Steps tutorial in the show notes. So let's listen to David's solution.
Hi, Allison. This is David from Oklahoma. I was listening to your latest show this morning and heard the question about how to close all open apps. I was wondering the same thing myself a few months ago, and my solution was to use Automator to create a custom application to do that. Basically, you open Automator and choose Create New Custom App. And then from the Utilities library, you drag the Ask for Confirmation action into the workflow first. I did this so that I would not accidentally close all my applications if I launched it by mistake or accidentally. Now you can customize the confirmation to display a message if you'd like, and you can even change the text on the buttons. Next, you drag the Quit All Applications action into the workflow below the Ask for Confirmation action. Now go to File and Save As, and give your workflow a name. Also, before you click Save, you will want to change the file format to Application. Now, you can save this to your Applications folder as I did, but you may need administrative privileges on your Mac to do that. This is a very simple workflow to create, but since I love Screen Steps as much as you do, I wrote up a little tutorial and sent it along with this recording. Love the show. Keep up the good work.
Isn't that just completely simple? I love how easy this is. I followed his instructions, and in about, I don't know, maybe 1 minute, I had my very own quit all app solution. Now, I mentioned that Sean took it a little further. He takes it one step further and says that there's a way to set certain applications not to quit, just in case that's a need you have, like there's one thing you want to keep open. And he shows how to get easy access to your new Automator script, too. I can't believe that three people gave me the idea of the Automator and idea, and two people came up with identical solutions, made audio recordings, and both made Screen Steps tutorials. It was perfect. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate your efforts. And like I said, Sean's Screen Steps tutorial is also in the show notes. All right. Believe it or not, we're actually done with the Quit Apps application. But how about a brand new dumb question from Will that I personally can answer? Here's what Will wrote in. I've been listening to half the Twitterverse talk about how much they like Tweety, Twitterific, Twirl, Bluebird, Canary, Beak, Syrinx, etc., except for their lack of groups. I don't see why you want groups. It seems like you're just creating more places you need to look to see your tweets. If I don't want to see somebody's tweets, I unfollow them. And if I do, I refollow. I've tried a few times to set up groups and had no idea where to start. Could you explain why you'd want such a thing? Well, it's very simple, actually, Will. The problem stems from the fact that I follow an awful lot of people. I think around 400. Anyway, I like having an entertaining stream of info from a ton of sources. I like to just pull out Twitter and just dunk my head in the Twitter river as it flies by. But there, I also like to know what specific people are saying. Like, I want to know what Steve's saying or Bart or other close friends and family are yakking about. See, Steve tends to tweet around the crack of dawn, or I should say technically before the crack of dawn. I think it's like at 4 in the morning or something. People have seen him tweet in numbers that started with 3. Well, by the time I roll out of bed, you know, he says I'm really lazy. I roll out of bed about 5:30 a.m., you know, just snoozing away the day. His tweets have already flown down the stream, and they've been covered up by people from the East Coast and all the European tweets. So I like to have groups so I can see his tweets and some other people, too. I have a few groups. I have a family group. I have internet friends, work, and my favorite category, in real life. I think that last category is funny because the in real life group doesn't tweet hardly at all. I've had some groups set up for about 3 days, and none of them have tweeted yet. Well, maybe my internet friends are my real friends. I like to think so. So basically, if you keep your the people you follow down to, say, a dozen or maybe even 50, where those people aren't very prolific, then you would never run into this problem at all. But that's why I like groups. Well, when it rains, it pours on dumb questions. This next one is a real stumper. I've been going back and forth with Ken Zuckerman trying to solve his problem for over a week, and I can't for the life of me crack the code on it. Here's what he's done. He has a set of icons that he likes to keep on his desktop. They're images of his 5 kids, his grandchild, his nieces and nephews, his mom and dad. And he says even he has a picture of his wife. So picture a bunch of little icons where the image is the is the icon itself. So anyway, he likes to see their smiling faces across on his desktop, and at any moment he can click on an icon, hit the space bar to see their smiling face come up on screen. He loves this. The problem is he wants these icons to stay arranged on his desktop to stay in the exact same place. What happens is he hooks up his external monitor that changes the resolution, and it scrambles all of his icons all around. And when he puts it back to just his laptop, I think it doesn't put them back where they were. Even if he sets it to keep arranged by, it doesn't help him. If he says don't keep arranged by, it doesn't work. How can he keep these from moving? I would really like to know the answer to this because I have racked my brains. I've searched. I've downloaded some applications that promised interesting arrangements of the icons. But it's kind of like, here, have all your icons look like a heart on your screen. Well, none of those address this problem. This is a shout out to the NoSillaCast community. I want a solution to Ken's problem. This is making me crazy. So I'm really wondering, do I even have to do a Screen Steps ad this week? I mean, what with all the tutorials David and Sean did for the show? Well, what about one more? Listener Marie Boyer was so excited this week when someone asked her how to sync iPhone notes to her Mac, or his or her Mac, because that gave her the perfect excuse to go use ScreenSteps to write up the instructions. See what I mean about this tool? It's so much fun to write tutorials with it, you actually find yourself looking for excuses to use it. I put a link in the show notes to Marie's tutorial, so if you want to know how to sync iPhone notes to your Mac, I do, you can go follow that link too. Well, the developers Greg and Trevor from ScreenSteps have been doing tons of live webinars lately demonstrating how to use the tool, and more importantly, they really address why you would want to use certain features. They really work at it from a position of what problem are you trying to solve and how does ScreenSteps solve it for you. I find I learn something new every time I watch one, and I'm not just saying that. Seriously, I watched one this week. I was like, whoa, I didn't know you could do that. Well, anyway, they have upcoming seminars on, they have Getting a Jump Start on ScreenSteps. They have one on ScreenSteps Live, and my favorite is entitled, Why Your Documentation is Useless and How to Fix It. I like that one. Anyway, I put a link in the show notes to where you can register to watch these free webinars to get yourself really excited about ScreenSteps. They usually put them up online later so you can watch them at your leisure, too. If you're already sold, go on over to ScreenSteps.com and be sure to use the coupon code NOCILLA, that's my name spelled backwards, in all capital letters, for 25% off. Or you can just push the button on the show notes. Well, I'm very excited about the interview I'm about to play for you. I'm not going to do any lead-in because I think I did the lead-in when I did the recording, but I would really like you to hear this interview. Well, I'm really excited to have on the show today Shane Jackson from the Blind World podcast at blindworldblog.blogspot.com. And of course, that link will be in the show notes. I have asked Shane to be on the show because he is actually an iPhone user and blind at the same time. And I want to say how on the heck that works. So welcome to the show, Shane.
Thank you very much. I've been listening for a long time.
Oh, hot doggies. I like that even better, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you stood in line and got an iPhone on day one, and you were telling me before we started about the reaction of the woman that you bought it from. Tell that little story.
Absolutely. I lined up at 6:45 a.m. on June the 19th at the AT&T store here in Birmingham, Alabama. Actually, Metro Birmingham. We're in a little suburb. And I was one of the first ones to go in. I mean, you should just seen the little salespeople running around like rabbits going, who are all these people out here? There were probably 15, 20 people lined up. So we were one of the first to go in because I had ordered my phone that Saturday before, 6 days before. And so they called me in, and this woman just, she goes in the back, she comes out with my beautiful iPhone and let me touch it. I mean, it was the first time I had really touched an iPhone. I'd seen a friend of mine, I'm like, yeah, so I don't want one. And then I touched mine and it was like electric shock. It's like, oh my goodness, this is the sexiest, sweetest looking iPod I've ever seen in my life. And it's got a phone built in it. So the lady's standing there programming the phone and she's going, what on earth are you doing with this phone? And she's looking at me, and then Abby's my wife. She said later that the lady was eyeing the guy over in the other at the other counter who had sold me the phone, and she's going, "Why did you sell him this? Why in the world would you sell a blind guy an iPhone?" So they had no clue about the accessibility built in. They had heard about the Zoom feature and the voice control. That seems to be everybody's favorite thing, and it's not mine, but the voice control. And they thought, oh, that, how's he going to use his phone? So
she thought they were being mean to you, huh?
Yeah. She was defending me.
So, okay. So you get the iPhone home. How do you use it without being able to see it? It's all touchscreen. So how can that possibly work?
All the focus in the podcasts that I've listened to, the mainstream podcasts, have been on voice control because you guys are so excited to be able to say, call Tom Jones, and it calls Tom Jones in theory. It doesn't work that way as you found.
Right.
But, and it, you know, play this song by Johnny Cash or play this song by Michael Jackson or play this song by whoever. And it's supposed to play it. You know, that's not what we're excited about. That's cool. Yeah, it's great. But what we're excited about is the fact that Mac OS 10, which I'm going to refer to it as Mac OS 3 on the iPhone, contains for the first time voiceover. Mac OS 10 has had voiceover since Tiger. And OS 3.0 now has full and I do mean full, VoiceOver support. So any application that's written in standard language will work with VoiceOver. And VoiceOver is the first gesture-based screen reader. Screen reader is what a blind person uses to hear the screen. It converts it to digital speech that we listen to. And here to, you know, up to this point, we've used a keyboard.
Gesture-based, you said? What does that mean?
Gesture-based. Up to this point, we've used a keyboard to navigate around a Macintosh or Windows or Linux computer. With VoiceOver on the iPhone, we now use gestures. You use tap and flick and slide or drag, they call it. So what you do on the iPhone, in theory, once you unlock it, you drag your finger around the screen, and as you're moving around, VoiceOver tells you the different applications you're passing: messages, camera, calendar, photos, iTunes, App Store, iPod, phone.
So does that work well because the size of the screen is actually pretty small? So, I mean, you're only moving an inch and a half or 2 inches across the screen?
A lot of blind people are used to reading Braille. Now, some of us don't, but a lot of blind people are used to reading Braille, and we know how to move our fingers very carefully and very lightly.
Okay.
And you have to get used to that, because if you just swipe your finger across the screen, you're going to get probably nothing. VoiceOver has a sound for a blank area of the screen. That's probably what you're going to hit. Now, what a lot of blind people do, once they get the hang of how things are laid out, like I have, you tap the area. For instance, let me give an example. Now, I don't know if this is correct on your phone. You can tell me if it is. But in the default settings, messages is up in the top left-hand corner in the portrait of your phone, and the phone is down on the bottom left corner of the phone. If I know that, I can take my iPhone, and I can actually, I'm going to unlock it first because it is locked.
Button. Unlock.
Okay, now messages. What I'm going to do, if I know that phone is in the bottom left hand, I don't have to slide to that. I can go down here and go
double tap to phone.
Tap. Double if I want to go to Safari,
Safari.
I know that that's in the right hand, and I know that iPod is in the very right hand corner.
iPod.
And I know that mail is in the bottom center.
Mail. Six new items.
And it's telling me I have six new items. See, this is VoiceOver working for us.
Wow.
VoiceOver reads all the built-in applications that are on the phone. Now, when you want to select an item, there are two ways of doing that. I'm going to go to, just for this podcast, I'm going to go to the phone.
Phone. Tap
now, if
open.
I want to select that, it says double tap to select, so I'm going to do that.
Phone, all selected.
And it says button. All selected, and the phone's open, so down at the bottom, I know I've got
favorites.
Buttons,
recents, selected. Contacts.
Contacts.
Voicemail.
So voicemail.
How are you getting to each of those? You're dragging your finger down?
I'm actually, you can drag your finger, and an iPhone will tell you all this, but I'm actually tapping, because I've learned after using it for a week, and I'm going to lock this up again so she won't keep talking. I have learned after using this for a week where everything is. So
okay,
all I have
really?
To do is I have to tap it. And once I tap it, to select it, I double tap very quickly.
Okay.
Yeah. Another way, which is actually faster after you get used to it, I advise people to use the double tap method for a while. But if you are using the iPhone and you're used to it and you know where your fingers are on the screen, and you know, you can use landscape and the applications that support that, get your finger on the item. Don't move your finger. Hold it still. And with the second finger over, or with the thumb from another hand, reach over and tap the screen once. It'll select it the same way. You don't have to double tap it.
So it seems to me a requirement of being blind is a really good memory,
a visual
memory of where things are. Because I could not tell you the order of the buttons, even on my home bar down at the bottom, which have been the same ever since I got the phone 2 years ago. I couldn't tell you which one's which. I got a vague idea. I think the phone's on the left, but I don't know about the rest of them.
It's all about memory, but you've got to understand, most blind people have been memorizing since we were born.
Yeah, right.
You've also got to have good hand skills. You've got to be able to use your fingers, especially when you go to typing. You asked me about typing.
Typing is
very awkward. What you do is, when the virtual keyboard pops up, you select the letter that you want with the tap or slide method, however you want to use it, or tap and drag method, either way you want to use it. Most of us, now that we're used to it, just tap the letter because we are familiar with the, you know, Q-W-E-R-T-Y-U-I-O-P, you know, A-S-D-F-G-H-J-K-L, semicolon, that sort of thing.
I've never heard anybody do it. What's the bottom row?
Z-X-C-V-B-N-M, and on the iPhone, delete, and space and return are at the bottom.
I have never heard anybody say that before. I guess you got to know, don't you?
Got to know. That's the only way you can type 120 words a minute as a blind person.
Are you serious? That's how fast you type? Not on the iPhone, certainly.
No. Okay. Between 100 and 100, I'd say about 100 and 120 words a minute on Mac.
That's insane. That's really fast.
And on a Mac, I don't have character feedback. I type with a blank. You know, it doesn't say anything. I go back and use spell check very much.
Yeah. So another thing you were showing me was, before we got on the recording, was this flick thing. Talk about that.
Okay. Flicking is like swiping. You swipe your finger to the right, swipe your finger to the left, or swipe your finger up and down. If you don't want to tap and you don't want to drag and you want to go through items really quick, you take your finger, you rest it on the iPhone, and you flick it to the right. Flick, 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 flick. And as you do that, it'll go between the different applications on the screen or the different settings within, say, the phone app or the mail app. If you flick left, it'll go backward. If you flick up or down, it depends on what's called a rotor setting. The voiceover has a rotor setting, and it'll go between characters or words. If you're on a website, it'll go between characters, words, visited links, unvisited links, all links, headings. And once you set the rotor, then you flick up and down to go through the different options. Like if you flick down to go through the links, flick up to go back through the link. You know, backward. You know, like up the page. And it's interesting, if you use a three-fingered flip to the left, it flips a page. Like if you've got, let's say you've got five pages, you know, on the screen and you want to go to page two, you flip three fingers to the left like you're turning a page. You picture it as turning a page to the left, and the page flips over. It's very awesome.
So, I got to ask you, how did you figure all of this out? Is there a manual somewhere that tells you all these different ways of doing it?
Absolutely. On the Apple website, Apple has a very good accessibility site. It's apple.com, and go to the accessibility there, and they had a whole group of pages on the iPhone, including how to, the keyboard command, or the gesture commands. I'm used to keyboard command. Gesture commands, they told you what to do, how to do this, how to do that, how to turn screen curtain on, which makes the screen almost invisible. In theory, it's supposed to save battery. It doesn't, at least on my phone. I don't find that it saves battery power. But to mute voiceover, you know, they're all there. All the commands are there. Apple did a really, really great job.
Wow. You know, I've said two really, really stupid things about technology in my life, predictions of mine, and I have now added a third to the list. The first thing I said was back in the 1980s, I said, there's three. We will never need a screen bigger than the Mac 512K. There's no reason for it. The second thing I said was there's no reason to ever put color in a monitor. And the third thing was I said there would never be undo in a computer-aided design application. I have now added number four. I said there's no way the iPhone could ever be accessible. By definition, it's inaccessible.
Well, there you go. You have just been proven very happily wrong.
Exactly.
And I got to pick a bone with you, too, right here on this recording where were talking about how I think it was you, or it may have been somebody else. So, you know, forgive me if it wasn't you. But somebody was talking about how they wish it could remove voice memo or whatever. You remember the voice?
Yes. Well,
let me tell you something. The voice memo to a blind person is an absolute essential. You've got to have voice memo because what if you're out? Picture this scenario. If I'm standing at the expo or wherever next to Allison Sheridan, I'm like, Allison, I need your email address real quick. I don't have a pen and paper there, and I don't have the old-fashioned slate and stylus with me, and I don't have my MacBook with me. Whip out the iPhone. Open the voice memo. Okay, Allison, give me your name and number.
I think maybe you misunderstood. It was interesting to me that you couldn't delete it, but then somebody pointed out you can't delete any of the standard apps. But the reason I wasn't wild about it was because I already had a memo application. There's a there's a voice recording app from the App Store.
Okay.
So that,
well,
that was it.
I don't get to pick a bone with you then.
Well, good try pulling that on me there. But why wouldn't you just open the address book and type it in?
You
just could. Too slow.
It's too slow. Yeah. And if you got to, you got to. I have found that to add contacts, you know, I know a lot of people on the blind iPhone list are having so much fun sitting there adding their contacts. I'm like, guys, I don't have time.
Yeah, exactly. Do that back on the Mac, right? Where you type 120 words in.
Yeah, absolutely. I go into address book, type in the contact, hit, you know, sync with iTunes, it's done. Now, if I'm on the go or something, yeah, I'll use the contact app. But I mean, with the way I type on the iPhone right now, which is pretty slow. Now we've got some blind people typing very fast.
One thing you'll find is your speed will be slow, and you know, a very, very slight increase in speed over time, and then suddenly you will hit this knee in the curve where it just goes nuts. And I'm be curious. Maybe I need to talk to you again in 6 months of whether that happens to you. As a sighted person, what happens is you really do just start to trust it. Like I was telling you before we started recording, is I just start typing and it looks like garbage as I'm putting it in, and the iPhone just goes, oh, I know what you mean, and it types in exactly what I meant. And as long as you manage to hit the space bar between words, if you miss the space bar, it all goes to heck. But it's an amazing speed increase just hits, but it takes a long time before that hits. So,
well, to be fair, we've actually got some really, 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 really what I call high def blind users who are, and I mean high def, you know, than high definition blind users. They got their iPhone and they started typing right off. You know, they took to the typing like a duck takes to water or whatever. I mean, we've got some that I've listened to podcasts and it's just absolutely amazing how fast they type. So it can be done. I don't practice as much as they do.
Well, I'm going to have to cut us off, as fun as this is. But so again, they can find you at blindworldblog.blogspot.com and listen to your podcast there. And you actually did some basically sound seeing tours going through the iPhone when you bought the iPhone and all that.
Yeah, the first podcast was just describing the podcast to you, the iPhone and the OtterBox case I got for it. The second one was actually the tour to the AT&T store, and the third one was actually a run-through of the iPhone. I demonstrated some of the apps and showed you how to use it and how to, you know, flick and drag and all that. So there's three podcasts up there. You're welcome to listen to them. There'll be more coming.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Shane, thank you so much for taking the time to come listen to us, and appreciate you being on the show.
Please keep this podcast going. This is awesome.
Yay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I had so much fun talking to Shane. That was just fantastic. I really liked talking to him. We talked for probably 45 minutes on Skype before we actually started the interview, and just really, really enjoyed talking to him. So I have a feeling I might need to have him back from time to time. I put links to his podcast at blindworldblog.blogspot.com in the show notes, and you can also follow him on Twitter at twitter.com/jack728. And I also put a link to the iPhone accessibility pages on apple.com, so you guys can go check it out and see what he's talking about. I think it's pretty amazing. I just loved it. Anyway, I'm all excited. That was fun. I really got a good kick out of that. Well, this week's testimonial on Honda Bob from his 30-year picnic comes from David Lovegren. I'm not sure this is going to actually make you want to use Honda Bob's services because he's a little odd, but at least it will make you giggle. All right, next up on our list here, I have David
Lovegren.
David Lovegren from Long Beach. So how long have you known Honda Bob?
Oh, and I've known him for years, back in the mid-80s, I think it was, when we first bumped into him. But the nicest thing about it, besides having to come out and work on the car, is I always have the kids there at home so he can look after them as well.
Yeah. So you do babysitting too?
It's a multitasking, but it somehow it works. That and duct tape. Between the duct tape and the tools, it seems to keep them down. You know, it gives them heavy tools
down
to put in their pockets, and they don't run around as fast that way.
But I did not realize he offered that service.
Yeah, it's not on his website, but I'm sure, you know, he'd be willing to do it just about for anybody. You just...
No, David's over here. He's actually cooking. We'll get... Ah, listen to that. You can hear the barbecue, the crowd going wild for his hamburgers. All right, thanks, David. Okay, so if you're new to the show, I should explain that Honda Bob is an amazing mechanic who only works on Hondas and Acuras, and he only works in the LA and Orange County areas. But if you're lucky enough to meet those two criteria, you can actually have the luxury of having Honda Bob drive to your actual house and fix your car while you relax in your actual own easy chair. Give him a call at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email over at hdabob@aol.com. Remember, HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie. Happy Sunday today, Bart.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. My whole weekend's been a bit weird.
We've had some fun visitors, right?
Yeah, it's been Podcasting Central around here. We recorded a live IMP live, so I guess that's an IMP very live, from my kitchen. So we had myself, we had Stu Helm was over from England, and then we had the two MacCrack lads over from Dublin, which isn't so far. So my whole kitchen was full of like XLR mics and cables and duct tape to hold them all down so we don't trip over everything, and mixers and
nice
laptops everywhere. It was Nerd Central.
Now, who brought the mixer?
Stu, he was very well packed. Like, I mean, wow. He could only bring one piece of carry-on luggage, but he made it count.
Wow. So he brought like one pair of pants, a shirt, and everything else was electronics, it sounds.
Pretty much, yeah, because he also, I have a, you may notice I sound better, it's because I have a new mic.
You sound fantastic.
Yay! So Stu has given me his old Samsung C01U or CO1U or C something 1U, that's circular. And then I bought a mic stand off him secondhand as well, so I now have really nice, proper podcasting setup. Which means that Stu is less heavily loaded on the way home.
Ah, good point. Yeah, the mic stand alone, those things weigh a fortune. You know, he and I were actually colluding a little bit on this a while ago, and I had said, you know, I got this mic stand I'm not using, and then I realized it would cost me like $45 to ship a $15 mic stand to you.
Yeah, I suppose they're heavy so they don't fall over, but goodness, there's a lot of weight in those bases, and Stu carried four of those bases over to Ireland.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm deadly serious. He had four mics. We couldn't use condensers because apparently they pick up sound from the sides as well as straight in.
Okay.
So because we wanted to keep the four channels separate, he had, like, stage mics.
Jeez.
So he had four stage mics, four mic stands, a mixer, a headphone amplifier.
Oh, my
gosh.
Never quite
figured out why. A MacBook Pro, XLR cables, and apparently some clothes. Oh, and he brought over his camera and his new 55-200 lens as well.
Oh, jeez, that by itself weighs a lot, right?
Yeah, but he had one of those twit fleeces that have like a million and one pockets that
you
use instead of hand luggage. So we had one of those and a backpack and a suitcase.
Now, that would have been a photos of picture of everything he brought. Did you get any pictures in the kitchen?
I did. It's already on my Flickr stream, but I will send you a link for the show notes.
All right, cool. Well, we should probably dig in. Thank you very much to Stu for your improved sound. You did have a pretty good little headset mic, considering.
Yeah, it was getting old, and there were loose connections, so if I moved my head, like, you disappeared from one ear, but not from the other ear.
And I have to admit, every once in a while, I would hear little knocking noises when you'd move your head. I could hear it, and hearing your chair, because you would be rocking in it, right?
Yeah, now that it's not a headset, I can't move.
You're stuck.
Which is a bit weird, because I'm used to being able to just do whatever I want while I'm podcasting, but not anymore.
Now you're focused. All right, what's our security light for today, Bart?
Our security light for today is a follow-up. Now, that's either because I haven't been at work all week, so I haven't been keeping up with my RSS feeds, or because nothing happened. I'm not exactly sure. But the nice Twitter users have been keeping us entertained. So we talked last week about how dangerous this whole URL shortening thing is.
Right.
So you'd included a tweet from Pierre. Pierre Bourgeois, I believe is how you would pronounce that, or it's how I would pronounce it.
Right.
So Pierre says, retweety and viewing the full URL security light follow-up, go to Preferences, Advanced, Preview, Short URLs. Now when you click on a shortened URL, it gives you the choice to view immediately, or if you wait a second, you get the expanded URL, which is nice.
So that was in Tweety, right?
Yes, that was in Tweety. Then you mentioned that Nambu definitely does this by hovering over the URL.
Right.
And then I got a tweet from Alan van Zeventer, which I'm assuming is a Dutch name because it just looks like a Dutch name to me. So it's either Flemish or Dutch in my humble opinion. He said, "Hi Bart, I heard you and AdPodFeet talking about short URL dangers. Well, Twitter Fox now gives real URLs when you hover over a short URL." So that's another client that does it.
So a lot of great options on that. Now, I've been working with Seismic for the last week, and again, it's a Twitter client that gives me the groups back. I like the groups in Nambu, but I can't send a direct tweet in Nambu, or it crashes for some reason on only me, not anybody else. But I have not yet figured out how to get see the shortened URLs in Seismic, so I'm a little worried about that. Gotta find a way around that one.
Yeah. Then, as a somewhat related side note, I did come across some stuff in the blogosphere about Twitter being used to send out links to a Windows and Mac-based DNS Trojan.
Oh, neat.
Now, they're not sure how the Twitter accounts are being compromised, whether it's just phishing that's leading to them or what, but there are people's Twitter accounts ending up compromised. I think Guy Kawasaki was the most high-profile one to be compromised. And then they're tweeting out links purporting to be a video of some famous celebrity with no clothes on doing naughty stuff.
And when it always comes down to that, doesn't it? That's always
it does often come down to naughty stuff or gambling, yeah.
Gambling without your clothes on, something like that.
Yeah. But of course, you don't actually get any naughty stuff. You just get a Trojan, and it's a DNS changer Trojan, which is actually the kind of Trojans for the Mac that I have seen for real.
Right, right.
I've come across a few of them in work.
Well, it's good to see that they're working cross-platform now, though. You know, you want everybody included in the party.
That's one positive spin to put on it. I don't like it so much.
Oh, dear. Well, speaking of Twitter clients, you wanted to chat about one of them this time.
Yeah, this is one I learned about right here on the NoSilicast. I don't remember which of our great listeners did the review of it, but someone sent in a review to you.
Right, right.
And it caught my attention, and I was getting fed up with a whole Adobe Air thing. It's like a pretend app that isn't really an app. It was getting to me, so I was in the humor for going for a native OS X app, and I was also in the humor for going free, and I'm in the humor for not getting advertised at. So when you put all those things together, Syrinx seemed like a good option to me, so I gave it a whirl.
I just checked it up, and it's Scott from Australia sent this in.
Ah, so thank you, Scott.
And what do you think of it?
Well, I've been using it for quite some time, and it sort of wins on the fact that it is a genuine native OS X app. So it behaves like all OS X apps should. It has the proper OS X window decoration-y bits. It has proper integration with my keychain, so my password is safely stored somewhere. It has proper OS X, so it has Growl integration, which is very nice. And actually, they've done it very well, the Growl integration. Because when it's just a regular tweet, it sort of pops up for a second and then disappears. But if it mentions you or if it's a direct message, it actually remains on screen and you have to manually dismiss it, which is perfect.
Now, you really like that. I find so often I end up with these things all over my screen and I have to wait for them to go away and I was just reaching to go do something in that same part of the screen. I like the ones where at least you can hit an X to get rid of them. But I don't think Syrinx doesn't give you any kind of X. Yeah. You simply have to sit there and wait for them.
If you click anywhere on them, they vanish instantly.
Hmm. Okay.
And I find it really nice that the DMs and the ones that mention you stay up, because that's actually what I care about more than anything else.
Right, right. I think you
can... So the rest, you know, I'll watch it fly by. If it's interesting, I'll have a closer look. But I do want the ones that genuinely need my attention to stay there.
Now, for some reason, I thought I remembered, correct me if I'm wrong, that you could have it not show you the regular tweets, only show you the DMs and the ads.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of customization.
Yeah.
If you want. I think its tagline is something like, you know, highly customizable, free Twitter experience or something to that effect.
Right. Once I got that fixed, I was getting just inundated with, since I'm following about 400 people, I was just getting crap all over my screen all the time till I stopped doing that. So that was good.
Well, it's under quite active development. So nowadays, it doesn't actually plaster your screen when there's a lot of them. It just gives you like 10 of them and then says, you know, 200 more. As one pop-up, it just says, and 200 more.
All right, good. Yeah, so I see. From Syrinx, you go into the Growl preferences, which is a system preference pane. And so within that, you choose the application Syrinx, and you can change direct replies and regular tweets. So I disabled regular tweets because that was driving me around the bend.
That's actually something that I think a lot of people don't realize, is that when an app has Growl support, it actually gets an entire control panel within Growl. And so you can customize how Growl treats the notifications it gets from the app.
Yeah. No, I hadn't realized it either until I went into that and I went, oh, look at all those other apps I could control.
Yeah. So basically the apps just send notifications to Growl and then you can customize Growl to do different things with different notifications for different apps, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what else about it?
The other thing I liked, which I remember when you were talking about it yourself, you didn't get, is how it deals with read and unread tweets.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a button in the menu bar called Bookmark All to Current. That's all you need.
Bookmark Newest, I think it's called.
Yeah. So then it just makes everything up to now read.
So I didn't know what bookmark means. The word bookmark didn't jump out at me. That it meant, to me, a bookmark is to say, pay attention to this particular event or this particular thing.
And well, if you think of it like a book, a bookmark in a book is a single piece of paper you move through the sequence of the book to show your position.
Yeah, that's true. So very different. It's actually, you're right, you're right. It follows exactly the way a bookmark in a book works, but not the way a bookmark on the web on a browser works. So yeah, it's very logical compared to a book. That's a good point. So everything past the bookmark is what you haven't read.
Exactly. Yeah. So it does actually, I quite like it, but it took me a little while to sort of twig what was going on. And then I went, aha! And now I really like that way of doing things. But it wasn't particularly obvious, I will admit.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, unfortunately, well, both unfortunate and not unfortunate, this app is under very active development because I've only been using it for a few weeks and I think I've had 3 updates already, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
But it's a new app and there's some polish required. There's quite a bit of polish required in some areas, in fact. Some things I've noticed, like there's some interface elements that are just not well worked out. It does have a retweet function, but it's hidden away in a menu, which is just silly because retweeting is something you do quite a bit.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, so if you click on a tweet, you get a whole bunch of options.
Right.
But none of those options are retweet.
Oh.
There's one of the icons is the universal symbol for reply, but that just makes a new at tweet.
And there's favorites, and look at the user, direct messages, toggle conversation. I don't know what that means.
It has support for conversation mode, so you can actually see what it thinks is a conversation. Because when you hit reply on a specific tweet, the Twitter APIs record that. So if everyone uses their clients properly, conversations can be recreated.
Yeah, that is kind of nice. I've just started to see that happening lately. I do like that feature, so you can figure out, well, what, especially when somebody replies to you and you can't remember what you said.
Oh.
Well, because they'll respond, you know, 2 days later or something with, oh, I totally agree. With what?
With what? Yeah, so that's nice. But as I said, there's no retweet function in there, which I really think there should be, because that is the kind of thing you do a lot on Twitter, because it's almost a voting thing. When someone says something interesting, you retweet it.
Yeah, there is a keystroke. You can do Shift-Command-T, but who's going to remember that? Too many things to remember.
Yeah, it should just be a button. There's a million and one buttons down there. It should be a button. On a very similar note, when you hit the reply button when you're in the direct message view, it doesn't send a direct message. It sends a public at reply instead.
Okay, so you're saying if you're looking at the direct messages, say that one more time?
So there's a separate tab for seeing only direct messages.
Right.
And if you're in that tab and you click the reply button, you don't send a direct message back in response to a direct message you got. You send back a public at request.
Ooh, and did you get in trouble?
Luckily, I wasn't saying anything nasty, but I have done it twice by mistake.
Oh, okay.
Which is not so good.
So are there other clients, if you've got a direct message and you hit reply, it does a direct, huh? I hadn't even thought about that.
Certainly with the arrow being the symbol it is, because on other clients, the direct message icon is an at sign.
Right.
Sorry, not the direct message icon. The
regular
at reply is an at icon.
Right.
And the direct message icon is something like an email envelope or something.
Oh, so you can clearly tell the difference. Yes.
But when you use a generic reply icon, you think to yourself a reply. And if I'm replying to a DM and I'm in the DM only view, my brain tells me it's going back as a DM. But Syrinx doesn't.
I can tell you for sure that you're going to hate Seismic. So what Seismic does, you know how, I don't know if it's a Tweety or which one it's in, but where when you hover over the person's face, it's got the four little icons right on top of their face, and the upper right is at, and the direct is on the upper left. Well,
yeah, that sounds like Twirl.
Okay, Twirl. That must be where I've seen it. So in Seismic, if the message has come in as a direct message, then the upper right will show the direct message symbol. So you click on that, only when you click on it, it changes back to the standard format, which is the at symbol. So you can purposely hit the direct reply button, and it's going to change into an at, so you've added. I've done it. It took me the longest time to. They were trying to show you that it's a direct message, but they put it in the wrong corner so that you hit it thinking, oh, I just hit the direct message thing. If you watch what it's doing, you can see that it changes to the standard format of the four buttons. So, but I don't think that was good
programming.
You mean.
So there's an icon there to indicate, which isn't really a button, but when you hover over it, the button that's really there appears.
Yes, yes.
That's a poorly thought out design.
Right. If you can put the little thing to tell me it's direct, but put it where the direct is on the left so you hit in the right place.
Yeah, definitely. On a somewhat related note, actually, something I've always liked about Twirl is that you just hover over the face to get the buttons.
Right.
Whereas with Cyrinx, you actually have to click on a tweet and then you get the buttons along the bottom. That's just a bit more clicking than I want to do, quite
frankly.
Yeah,
a little difficult. It is pretty, though.
Yes, absolutely. The other thing I found annoying is there's no easy way to get to a user's timeline. So you double-click on their face, which brings up a whole new window with all of your contacts in it, and then with them selected, thankfully. And then you have to click a little button that looks like a head and a body, sort of a Microsoft-y-type logo. And that then opens up your web browser on their screen.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I just did it. No, I don't want to do that.
Exactly. So that's a big downside. That's probably the most annoying thing about it, and they just need to get that sorted out, and then I'll be a much happier customer. And then sort of the last thing is that there's no delete button, which I guess is somewhat related to the fact that if you accidentally at-reply instead of DM, you can't just quickly delete it before anyone sees it, because there is no delete button, so you have to go to the web and delete from the web.
Oh, now I thought the only place you ever could delete was the web. I didn't know. So the other applications have delete from within there?
Twirl has a trash can icon, which when you click on it, deletes.
Ah, okay. By the way, there's a faster way to get to the feed, the person's timeline.
Okay.
When you're looking at them and you've got the row of buttons, or you look at the message, you got the row of the buttons, the fourth one over is that same little head guy.
Oh, it's that silly head.
Yeah.
And does it still bring it up in the web browser?
Yeah. It's still stupid, but it's one less step to get to stupid.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I hadn't noticed that silly head.
Tiny bit.
That's good. Something else that, as a security boffin, gets to me is that a couple of weeks ago we hit the tweetpocalypse.
Yeah,
and as far as I'm concerned,
we didn't actually explain what that is. Start from the beginning on that, because I meant for us to talk about it last week and we didn't.
Okay, so every tweet ever written has a unique ID.
Okay,
which is a number that counts up, and that number is getting pretty big because there have been a lot of tweets since the existence of Twitter. And we hit the point at the tweetpocalypse when that number became too big to represent by what's called an unsigned integer.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, it was a signed int. So it's a data type. So when you flick binary numbers around and you go one over, so when they all flip back over, what you end up doing is going to negative and the extreme end. So a signed integer can go between minus a couple of billion and plus a couple of billion. And when you roll over from plus a billion and one, as it were, it takes you to minus as far as it can go. So all badly written Twitter clients that had just used used a signed int without thinking about it, because it makes no sense to use a signed data type for a counter that goes from one up. It makes absolutely no sense to use a signed data type.
Okay. I'm not following you completely, but the main thing is there's some sort of numbering scheme that's really bad to use and there was a smarter way to do it?
Okay. When you're programming, every bit of information you hold, you give it a type. And that type determines what can go in there. So an integer represents a whole number.
So they should have used integers?
There's two types of integers, signed and unsigned. So a signed int has minus numbers and plus numbers.
Okay.
And an unsigned int has only plus numbers.
Okay.
So an unsigned int in 32 bits can represent from 0 to a really, really, really big number, while a signed int in 32 bits can represent minus a big number to plus a big number, but they're smaller big numbers. Because you shift it down, if you get what I mean. There's only so much data you can put into 32 bits. So do you want half of it to be negative and half of it to be positive? Or do you want it all positive?
Okay.
So anyone who chose a signed int, which is a completely retarded thing to do, because things cannot be negative, so it shows you were not thinking.
Okay.
And the reason this is important, you're familiar with the concept of a buffer overflow and all these kind of horrible things that lead to nasty vulnerabilities?
Yes.
They come about when you don't check your data, when you're using the wrong data types and not checking what's handed over and back between functions.
Sort of like the Y2K bug kind of thing?
No, the Y2K is simply not leaving enough room.
Okay, but if this number can't get big enough, isn't that the same as not leaving enough room?
Sure. The actual Twitpocalypse is just like Y2K, but it's a symptom of not thinking about your data. Okay. And when you don't think about your data, you leave yourself open to buffer overflows and other carry-on.
So we did hit the Twitpocalypse, which was when we hit a number a little over 2 million, right? 2 billion, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically that was the size that assigned int can go.
Okay.
So they should never have been using assigned int.
So some Twitter clients used signed int and some didn't. So some were using signed and some were using unsigned.
Yeah, and some may have been using a completely different data type that can go way further. I mean, there's lots of different data types. Just if you don't actually do any thinking, most the default in most cases is just a simple 32-bit signed integer.
Okay. So,
so it's a sign of just not thinking.
So Syrinx did it the wrong way.
Not just Syrinx. So a scarily large number of clients did it the wrong way. Hmm. And to me, that says these people are not thinking about their data types, which tells me that these people's code is prone to all sorts of vulnerabilities that involve abusing data types. And that's quite a lot of vulnerabilities.
So does that mean you're not going to use Syrinx because of that?
No, because just about every client fell prey to it. Oh. What it tells me is that Twitter developers need to engage with their brains. I'm hoping it acted as a wake-up call.
Yeah, yeah, it might have, right?
I hope so. I really hope so, because it just worried me an awful lot. It just triggered a million and one alarm bells in my head. And if it had been just one or two clients, then I would have simply avoided those clients. But it was almost everyone. So what are you going to do?
So let's see. There was one last thing that you said you didn't like about it.
Which takes us back full circle. Which is it has no support whatsoever for URL shorteners. And I don't just mean that in terms of it doesn't do the decoding like we would like our clients to do. It also doesn't even do the encoding. So if you want to send a link to something in a modern web browser, you know, in a modern blog with the title is half the blog post, you actually have to go on the web to a URL shortening homepage, copy and paste in the URL, shorten it, and then copy and paste the result into your tweet.
That's a big hassle. It's really not in there? That's hard to believe.
Well, okay. I haven't found it. So if it is in there, it's too well hidden. So either the problem is the interface is poor, or the problem is they don't support it. But I haven't found it in 3 weeks.
It's under Edit, Shorten URL, Command-Shift-U.
Ah, but of course, Command-Shift-U.
So if we can remember Command-Shift-T for retweet and Command-Shift-U, let's see how it works. So you paste it in here.
I'm under Edit and I don't see it. Oh, do I?
Yeah, you select.
I don't see it. Maybe I have to be typing.
No, it was grayed out for me, but I did. I just went under help and type shorten. So you type it in, select it, and then do Command Shift U. It should be a button though.
But will it let you type in a big URL that goes over that number of characters?
Yeah, just paste in a big fat URL, then select that big fat URL and hit Command Shift U, and it shortens it up to a tiny URL.
Okay, hang on, but what happens if it goes over 140 characters and just the URL, which can happen?
Yeah, they always let you go past that.
Hang on, I just test to see what happens here. Excuse me. 20, 19, 10, 5. Okay, no, it does let you keep typing. That's fine. Okay, that'll work. It's still not right. There should be buttons there.
There should be buttons there, but we'll have to correct the show notes to say that they did it, but they could make... I would put in the same category as how they made it hard to do some of the other things, like retweet ought to be a button, and seeing someone's timeline should be a button, too.
The issue, though, is they don't decode short URLs, that I know for a fact.
Don't decode... Oh, they don't.
There's one here in front of me. So, yeah, so again, they fail again on that. But like I say, it's under active development, so I'm hoping... I'm going to write up a blog post on this, and I'm hoping it'll show up on their radar.
Maybe send them a link to it, too, to say, hey, you know, take a look, here's some of the things that concern me.
I find you usually don't have to do that, because most people who write software have Google Alerts set up that look for their own name.
They find it.
So they generally find it and then post a comment. That's certainly been my experience. I've never brought a blog post to the attention of a vendor, but I've had lots of vendors reply.
Yeah, I have noticed that. Not always.
No, but that again reflects on the vendor in my mind. They should be doing that.
Right.
If you're running something and you're not running a Google Alert on yourself, you're not really paying very much attention.
So you think you're going to keep using it?
For now, because it's under such active development, because I've seen 3 updates in a few weeks, I'm happy to stick with it and watch it grow. But they'd want to get to some of my shortcomings within the next couple of months, or else I'd off.
We should put one of the good points, of course, is that it is fully accessible. And that was where why we got the tweet about it in the first place, the email about it in the first place. So that's certainly something I appreciate.
I'm assuming that accessibility came about because it's a native OS X app rather than an Adobe Air app.
Might be. Maybe I should ask the blind community about some of the other apps, you know, rate these by accessibility or something like that. Might be interesting.
Because I know OS X has really good APIs for accessibility. So if you write native OS X, you have all these great tools at your disposal.
Oh, right, right. Okay, is it my turn to do a rant?
Am I supposed to be the ranty one?
I know, but I need to do a rant. And well, now I was trying to calm down, but then I did a little AIM with you, and you got me all spun back up. So here's what happened. As you people probably know, have figured out by now, I got the iPhone 3GS, what was it, a week ago. And a couple of days ago, I was Thursday night, I was coming off, got off a plane. I was texting with Steve. I shut my phone down for a few minutes while I was doing some other stuff. And then I popped it back open. And all of a sudden, I was in the Zoom function. So I think it's
in the Zoom function.
Well, I don't know how it got in there, but it's an accessibility feature. Basically, the date and time was about, you know, an inch tall on the screen, and I couldn't see anything else. And if you pushed down on the screen and dragged your finger around, it would drag to different parts of the screen. And I tried resetting it, but I couldn't reset it because I couldn't get to the slider that said to shut it down. I was really frustrated. I kept resetting. I finally got it, figured out how to get it to do that. I did that a couple times, couldn't get it. And then I thought, I finally came home and I was about to throw it out the window, and Steve started playing with it and figured out the pattern of how you have to push on the screen to get it to move properly. And I thought, you know, I wonder if this is accessibility. And sure enough, there's a feature called Zoom, and it had turned itself on. So I thought that was a little dodgy, but, you know, whatever, got it fixed. But the problem was the next day I turned it on. Yesterday I turned it on. I guess I went a day, it was okay. And then yesterday I turned it on and the screen was unresponsive.
Which means you can't interact with it at all because it's a touchscreen device.
Exactly. Now, I could push the center, the home button, so I could get to search, or I could get to talk, the voice control. I could get to that because that's all controlled through the main button. But I couldn't, I could get to the search thing, but I couldn't type except certain letters. So it was responsive in certain parts of the screen and not in other parts, and not consistently in the same parts. So I did a hard reset, then I did a full restore, the thing you
factory
do before you do a restore, the thing where it says put it back at its factory settings.
Or something?
Well, first you got to set it back to factory settings. I forget what that's called. Anyway,
yeah, okay.
So I set it back to factory settings, did a restore, synced it all back up, and it had no effect on it at all. So I checked with the Apple Store, and they didn't have any appointments, which is always the case at my Apple Store. You can never get an appointment. I don't know how anybody gets appointments. I actually saw it set an appointment at 12 o'clock. I said, yes, 12 o'clock, perfect. And it said there aren't any appointments at that time. So that was frustrating. So I thought, well, I'll call Apple.
You've convinced too many of your neighbors to go Mac.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, well, plus our Apple Store is really, really small. It's a tiny little one, so... So I called AppleCare and I told the guy, I said, okay, right off the bat, I'm a really sophisticated user. Here's everything I did. He goes, okay, so you've done everything I would tell you to do, every single thing that's in my script. So and he said, thanks for saving me some time. And what's that?
I'm really glad that he did that because I have been on calls to tech support where I have explained that I have done all of these steps and they make you do them again. Not just wasting their time, but your time too.
I won't start on my 4-hour Epson call. But that is exactly what happened. And they were bad. You had to hang up and get back into them to prove that you had actually gone and done it. And it was a 2-hour wait to get back on the call.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, there were tears. That was the last day I said I'd ever veer from HP printers. But anyway, this is about Apple. So I get on the phone with this guy and he says, okay, diagnosed everything. He says, well, let me get you an appointment at the Apple Store. I said, yeah, good luck. And he goes, how's 3 o'clock? Okay. I said, push it really fast. So he got me an appointment at 3 o'clock. So I walked in, I handed him the phone. They did a little bit of diagnostics. They checked it for water damage and they looked at it and it clearly hadn't been dropped in any way. I mean, technically it probably had been, but you know what I mean? It hadn't,
yeah, it's not bounced badly.
Right. It was in a case and, you know, pristine. And I showed her my original iPhone that was 2 years old. And I said, see this? No dings, no nothing, because I take really good care of my stuff. And she said, yep, we got to replace it. I said, okay, fine, no worries. And she said, but we're out of stock. And I said,
really?
What do you mean you're out of stock? There's a woman at the door handing coupons to people to buy them. And she goes, oh, yeah, the new ones are a different part number. The replacement ones are it's a different part number. It's not a refurb or anything like that. It's just these are the ones, these have special part numbers that say they're replacements.
Right. Death by red tape. I think that is disgraceful.
I went ballistic because I just said, you know, okay, but this, actually, I didn't go ballistic at first. I said, yeah, this is called, you know, bureaucracy. And now what you do is you use your creative mind to get around the bureaucracy because that's obviously unacceptable. And she goes off and she gets a manager and the manager comes over and tells me it can't be done. And but then they started offering me a really weird option. And I think this actually was her trying to do what I wanted, was she said she could give me a new one, but there would be no point of sale on it. And because there's no point of sale, there would be no registration that the new serial number was attached to me. I would still be having the old serial number, which means, you know, at some point in time, I'm going to call in 2 years or a year from now in the future, something's going to go wrong because I don't have the right serial number. They're going to say, this isn't your phone.
Yeah.
And she said, and she brought that up. She said, this could be problematic in the future. Well, okay, then don't do it that way. And she goes,
So why offer you the bad up?
Well, it turned, I mean, that was her trying to be creative. She said, yeah, that's why we don't like to do this for people. Well, okay, how about offering me an option where I do own my own phone and I get to walk out of it here today? And finally I did, you know, I mean, I said, look, you know, in the last 6 months, I've bought a top-of-the-line MacBook Pro, a top-of-the-line 24-inch iMac, two MacBooks, two iPhones, and two iPod Touches in 6 months. You want to take really good care of me.
You know? Yeah, I'm straight.
And she said, I don't have any way to do that. And then I said, well, I'm a podcaster and I'm going to podcast about this. I was stomping my little tiny foot. But she really had no way to solve the problem. And she went off in the back room for a long time. I mean, like 10, 15 minutes. And at first I thought she was just like, decided I'll go get a cigarette till this lady calms down. But then I realized what she was really trying to find, a creative solution. She was trying to find that third option. And she was working with this other guy and trying to figure out some way to do it. And they really could not come up with a way to do it. So I get to go back to the Apple store on Monday. But I mean, she gave me her card. She told me what time she works. She told me what time she takes lunch. Said, call her and double check that it came in and she'll take care of me. So the really good news is that they said I could take my SIM card out and just drop it back in my old iPhone.
Oh, okay. So at least you're not without a phone.
Right. I'm not even without an iPhone. I'm just...
Yeah, well, just without cool 3G-ness.
Exactly. Well, it is kind of interesting to go back and try to see what's different because I'm having trouble telling what's 3.0 and what's the new iPhone. And it's not that much different, really. It's just stinking a lot faster.
You are running 3.0 on the old iPhone, though, right?
Yes.
Okay,
Right, so now I'm just comparing the 3GS-ness against the original non-3G iPhone. So, yeah, it's definitely slower. I don't know. I'm not sure I have a right to rant as much as... I mean, it's just kind of lame that Apple doesn't have a way of solving that problem for me.
Yeah, you see, when I end up in a situation like that, my brain at that point flips into a different mode and says, okay, I now have a complaint to make, and I want you to take that complaint seriously, and I want you to explain to me how you're going to propagate that complaint up through your chain of command.
Yeah.
Because clearly this is not good enough. So you now need to make, you know, trigger a chain of events that is going to solve this issue for the future.
For the next person, yeah.
And when you go into that mode, they're kind of a bit flummoxed because they can't be mean to you because you're being quite helpful, really.
Right. Right. It's that's probably a good idea. I might mention that to her to say, you know, clearly a lot of times when you turn around the other way and say, now, clearly you're as frustrated as I am with this because you would like to make me happy. That's one of your objectives.
Exactly. And and then at that point, you're changing the whole onus and you're now getting them. So what you're going to do to help me is to put in a complaint through your appropriate channels and to fix this problem systematically.
Right.
It won't help me, but it will help many others. And that changes the ballgame a bit. But I always insist on doing that. I don't know if it's effective.
Oh,
but I always turn those tables before I hang up.
Yeah. you know, I forgot one interesting tidbit of this. The whole reason this was true was because I bought it through AT&T.
Oh, no.
She said that would not have been a problem if I had bought it through Apple. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Wouldn't it still be a different part number if I'd bought it through Apple? So that whole part number thing, is that piece fake? And I said, so are you trying to tell me that people should not buy iPhones through AT&T? And she goes, well, I didn't say that. And I said, well, okay.
I just implied it's true.
But issues, and that, okay, that takes us into another bureaucracy thing, was I couldn't buy it through Apple because I needed to buy two iPhones, and I couldn't physically be there that day. And I'm a big fat baby, wanted it on day one. Okay, I mean, I could have gone in day two, day three, day four.
The whole carrier to Apple tie-in. Over here in Ireland, we don't have the choice to buy the iPhone from Apple. Our only choice is to buy the iPhone from our carrier. So in some ways, that speeds things up because there is no, you're not waiting on any sort of relationship between the two. It just, there's only one partner involved.
Right. No finger.
But at the same time, yeah, it's hard to get around phone companies.
Well, AT&T did a perfect job. They had the capability of letting me buy two phones on the same day on two different lines. Apple did not. They delivered it to me the day they said they would deliver it to me. They were kind enough to leave $1,200 worth of phones on my front doorstep without requiring a signature.
Which is not good. But no, at the end of the day, the reason Apple are not in a position to offer you that is because AT&T's back systems don't give Apple that functionality.
Probably.
Because you're talking about two computer systems interacting, so Apple can only do what AT&T let them do.
Yeah, yeah,
and you
that's
can rest assured that Apple want as much input as they can possibly get.
Yeah,
and AT&T protect their little fort zealously.
So whenever there's two companies involved, it's always four times as bad as just one company, I suppose.
I think it is a square rule, actually. Yeah, so three companies would be nine times as bad, four companies 16 times as bad.
Exactly. Well, I'll get off my rant, and hopefully on Monday I will be back to new iPhone. Oh! What the part I'm really looking forward to is I had to activate my old iPhone back on AT&T, which switched me back to the $20 a month deal. You know I'm going to get charged proration charges for these 2 days and the 28 days and everything, right? You know something's going wrong there.
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
You can pretty much guarantee it, right? You can smell that.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I'm in for 7 or 8 hours of discussion on the phone with these people. It's pretty much going to be hell on earth.
Yeah, but then you're going to be on to AT&T, and they're much less helpful than Apple on the phone, as was proven this week.
Exactly.
There was a news story we covered in IMP that Apple scored highest in satisfaction rates of phone support.
Really?
Hmm. Way higher than Dell and everyone else.
Interesting. They have been really good lately.
Well, you see, on the one hand, this sounds great, but I think it was something like 59% were happy, whereas only like 20-odd percent were happy with the others. So, you know, so they That's do horrible. Badly, but way better than anyone else.
I think I've seen one of those reports recently, too. I saw something like that maybe 2 or 3 months ago. It was just kind of absurd.
But they're always presented in the Apple press as great news, you know, Apple best at phone support. And you're looking at it going, Apple least crap at phone support is the headline I would have used.
I think that's true with cars. You know, they have the same thing on you know, number of returns in the first year, you know, because of hardware failures in the first year. And it's like that. It's like, you know, 30% of the people were unhappy at some point in time, and that's the best in class.
Yeah. So, least crap.
It reminds me of Verizon actually, or Research in Motion actually told me on the phone, with a Verizon rep on the phone with me, that Verizon considers a 25% return rate to be acceptable on their cell phones.
So 3 out of 4 people can be annoyed, and that's okay.
No, 3 out of 4 are happy. One out of four is unhappy, right? One out of four is so unhappy with the device that they return it.
That's insane.
Can you tell your customers where you work that it's okay? I consider it acceptable if 1 out of 4 of you are unhappy when you leave talking to me.
That would not fly at work. That would not fly at all.
I'm not thinking in any business other than this would that fly. Well, we've probably been blathering on long enough, but thanks for letting me rant to you. I really wanted to get that off my chest.
Somehow I think that's more fun to do when there's someone listening on the other end than just saying it into a mic on your own.
Exactly. At least I usually have the chat room listening to me rant, but yeah, it's a little more fun off the cuff here. So, all right, well, are we on for next week?
I do believe so. I'm technically still on holidays all of next week, so I don't know what I'll be doing yet, which is kind of nice. I don't usually not know what I'm going to be doing a week from now.
You were on holiday all week and you're on holiday all next week?
I've decided for the first time in as long as I have been working, I usually scatter my leave.
Uh-huh.
So that it sounds better in my head that I have like little individual blobs of leave to look forward to. But sometimes if you really just want to get away from everything, taking 2 weeks at once is a really good way to do it, because I've now completely forgotten about work now and I have a whole other week to enjoy it.
Oh, that is nice. And getting stuff done around the house, just puttering for days on end, that's fantastic stuff.
The house needs it.
All right, Bart, we will talk to you next week.
Until then, happy computing.
Well, I want to give one last thanks to Stu for giving Bart a new mic. He sounded so great in that. The chat room's having a lot of fun talking right now over on ustream.tv/nosilicast. They're laughing about how on earth did he fit all of that stuff in his luggage, Stu, that is. So really want to thank him again for the great sound. Really, really good stuff there. Anyway, I had a great time this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, too. Remember to keep those dumb questions coming, along with comments, suggestions, even complaints. I read those last. Anything your heart should desire by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter to hear my nonsense all week long at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.